Hello there, and welcome to another podcast episode from Animal Training Academy. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge, and as always, I'm super stoked to have you here with us this morning. We're going to have a lot of fun today. We're going to be talking about how to write a good training plan, and I can't wait to learn new things because to discuss this in depth, I'm reconnecting with a good friend who I did a podcast episode with a couple of months ago, Debbie Marin from San Francisco Zoo. Now, if you haven't heard that previous episode, then I will put a link to it in the podcast write-up for today, and you can listen to it there. Or you can just click on the podcast tab in the main menu at animaltrainingacademy.com and you'll find it all there. Before we say hi today though, I thought it would be beneficial just to do a quick recap of who Debbie is and what she's been up to. She holds the position of Director of Training and Behavioral Husbandry at San Francisco Zoo, California, USA, and has over 40 years experience working in the zoological industry with a large array of different species and holding many different job titles. Debbie is passionate when it comes to providing optimal animal care and practicing positive techniques that really benefit the animals she works with. Towards the beginning of her career, Debbie attended Moorpark College and graduated from the Exotic Animal Training and Management Program. She then spent the next 27 years at Marine World Africa, USA, doing some sensational stuff there, ending up unintentionally specializing in husbandry training. Debbie's current role, Director of Training and Behavioral Husbandry at San Francisco Zoo, provides her with an opportunity to engage in another passion of hers, teaching and mentoring other trainers, and doing everything she can to participate in San Francisco Zoo's continual advancement of training and enrichment practices for all animals. I'm going to learn a lot today, and you're going to learn a lot today as well. So a very big and gratuitous good morning to you, Debbie.
Good morning. How are you?
How's everything in San Francisco today? And I believe you're at work, are you?
Yes, great. Beautiful weather today, and it's our summer season, and we have summer camp going and lots of guests this time of year. So there's a lot of activity in and around the zoo.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Hey, let's dive straight in, Debbie. You and I have discussed some specific areas that we thought were going to be really beneficial to talk about today when it comes to writing training plans, and we're going to go over those specific areas one at a time. But to start off, maybe if I could just ask you to define for the audience maybe what a training plan is and the benefits of taking time to formulate one when managing animal behavior.
Okay. Well, a training plan is basically the big picture of what you want to do with your animal and all the information that you know about your animal. And if you want to really have a successful training program, starting with the training plan is going to set your animal and your trainer up to succeed, because it means you've really thought through every component that affects the animal's training and behavior and all the things you have to consider before you get started. It'll prevent problems down the line and you'll have a much more positive experience.
Yeah, cool. And so important, because you don't want to just be starting training your animal without any direction or knowledge of where you're heading, where you currently are, or what you have to do.
Our philosophy is every animal is an individual, and so they need an individual plan. If they were all the same, like a computer or a television, there'd be a guide on here's how you train this behavior. But because every animal is so different, they need that individualized plan to succeed.
Yeah, great. Thanks for that, Debbie. And a great little overview of the importance of what we're going to be discussing today, and a nice little kind of takeaway definition for everyone there. And I like what you just touched on. So we'll move on to that topic that you just started to talk about then, that involves learning about your animal. Can you tell us a little bit more about this and about some of the important elements to consider when doing this part of your training plan?
Yeah, so, you know, if it's an animal you work with, you're going to know a lot about that animal already. For me, I am mentoring people and they know their animals or that species more than I do. So basically the way that it'll work out here is that if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I need help, you know, training the colobus monkeys for a certain behavior, if I haven't worked with that species before, the first thing that I'll do is I will look up and read everything I can find on the natural history and behavior of colobus monkeys. And I'll look at training manuals and the AZA husbandry manual, because I want to learn as much I can about that species of animal. And then the next thing I'll do is I'll sit down with the keepers and I'll say, tell me a little bit about your animals, about their individual personalities, their social dynamics, what things do they like, what things do they dislike? Because, you know, we're going to have to think about motivation as we're moving down the line. And so what's motivating to that animal and what's scary to that animal is all going to be part of their personality profile that I'm going to go through with the keeper. Once we learn as much as we can about the species and the individual animal, then we're going to look at the environment that the training is going to be happening in. So we can think about the feng shui, as we've talked about before, of setting up the environment to also be positive for the animal. And what can we do to make sure that they're comfortable and happy and it's as positive a place as it can be before we start the training. We're also going to look at who's going to be doing the training, because you want to have it with somebody that the animal has a good relationship with, especially if it's some kind of a medical cooperative behavior. You're not going to ask the animal to do the behavior with somebody they don't know or that they don't trust and have a negative response to. So there's so many little components that affect the animal training. You want to look at all of them, and then you're creating the most positive, successful approach.
Great. And this is all being conducted before we even start to engage in the training process. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So the more you know before you start, you're having problem prevention and you're planning ahead. So if your animal's moving faster than you do, it doesn't get ahead of you. You know what your next step is going to be. And you're also setting your trainers up to succeed, because everybody's at a different level. So just like I want to make an individual plan and learn as much I can about the animal, I also want to learn as much as I can about the person doing the training. Are they a really experienced trainer? Have they trained this species before? Have they trained this type of behavior before? And so some people might need just a little bit of mentoring or a little tweaking on their plan. And some people might need a lot more observation and supervision or discussion to go through the plan to see if there's any areas that we want to tweak a little bit or add information to.
Yeah, cool. And just for anyone who's listening who might be, say, working in a zoo and is in a team and wants to start to formulate improved training plans for their facility, we talked about a number of things there: natural history, individuality, reinforces, punishes, personality. When we're formulating a training plan, Debbie, what advice can you give as to how to put this down onto a piece of paper? How to put it into a document on a computer so it's a formal plan that we can hand to managers?
Well, what we have here, and I'd be happy to send you a copy, is we actually have a training plan approval form. And so we kind of put everything down on there and you start filling it out, and then it will remind you to address all of these topics on there, including safety, which I didn't mention earlier. So are there any safety concerns? And if so, how are they going to be addressed? Do you need to do any modifications to the facility? So if you have a form to start with, it will help to make sure that you cover all of the components you want to look at before you get started. And the nice thing about that is that you can also share your plan with other trainers in your facility or outside of your facility, and they might read through it and be able to give you some advice or tips or ask you questions to improve your plan.
Yeah, that's great. And I would appreciate it. And I think a lot of people out there additionally would appreciate it if you could share those documents, and I'll attach them to the podcast write-up. I think that'll be really beneficial for a lot of people. You mentioned trainers and their skill levels, and to me that's part of the environment of the animal we're training. And you briefly mentioned just then the physical environment that the animal lives in, its space, its holding space. I call it feng shui, making sure that we set our animal's environments up for success, and more commonly known as antecedent arrangement. Can you maybe talk us through this a little bit more and how you would incorporate information about that into a training plan?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could consider them part of the environment too, when you put it that way. I guess I think of them separately, but in a way they really are part of the same thing. I feel, you know, like if I'm looking at the animal's environment and I want to go back there and look at it and say to the person who's used to caring for the animal, and with my eye being fresh, are they comfortable in this environment? Is there anything in here that makes them uncomfortable or not wanting to be in this space? Then I want to be able to change it. Do they need better lighting? Do they need an animal that they don't have a good relationship with to leave? What can I do to make sure they're comfortable in there? And that's going to be individual, you know, to each animal. So knowing, again, your animal and their likes and dislikes, you're going to know if they're comfortable where they are. Do they need to have the door open, which is one of my choice things for the animals, is that, you know, a lot of times when we're setting a plan, I have newer trainers say, well, do you want me to lock them in there? And I'll say, no, we don't want to lock them in there. We want it to be their choice. It's their choice to participate. And sometimes just knowing that that door's open and we're giving them a choice makes them more apt to want to participate. When I'm looking at trainers, again, the skill level, I don't want to give them a behavior that's beyond their experience because I want them to succeed. And so you want to make sure that they can do a simple behavior before you get complicated. So it's kind of a kindergarten to college thing. And you want to make sure that the animal is comfortable with that particular person. And I, you know, you watch animals with certain people and you can see that they have different relationships and different responses to different people that they interact with. And so we, again, are going to set them up to work with somebody that they're comfortable with on all of the behaviors.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And just to add on there, just before we move on to kind of the next area that we highlighted, we wanted to talk about, can you maybe just go over a little bit more as well about environmental arrangement and working in an institution like yours, if you did have to change something in the environment, how does that involve other teams in the zoo, the building team, maintenance team, whatever you call it? Can you maybe go over a little bit about that?
Yeah. So there, our zoo is very, very old. And so when this zoo was built, a lot of the facilities that I've worked in, people didn't really train animals back then. So there's nothing designed for training. When you look at a newer zoo or new facilities that are being added on now, they know that they're going to be doing training. And so they help design that into the new plans. So oftentimes when we go in there, we're like, well, how are we going to access this animal to do this behavior? And we know that we have to modify the facility somehow, whether it's an injection bench for the lions or a flap we open up to get a tail out to draw some blood. And so we will figure out how we can modify the exhibit, but that's not my skill set. So luckily for us, we have a maintenance department and we go through a work order system and we write up what we want to do and how we want to access the animal. And then they lend their expertise to maybe modify it and tell us how to accomplish our goal. And then they do the work to get that built for us or modified for us so that we can do our training. So oftentimes we can't progress without their help.
Yeah. So a pretty important part of the training plan is kind of identifying those environmental arrangement things that we need to do, isn't it?
Yes. If you can't get the facility modified and set up for what you need to do, your progress kind of stops right there.
Mm. So pretty important to get that training plan and start to articulate these thoughts and feelings and identify everything you need moving forward. And one of the benefits of collecting all this information is assisting us in determining what's important to focus on when we start and therefore setting goals and prioritizing our time and resources. Do you want to maybe please dive into this a little bit deeper for us, Debbie? The benefits of training plans and helping us prioritize and set goals.
You want to look at each behavior and you want to look at the big picture. So you want to look at where's the program going to go down the line. And very importantly, you want to look at what does the veterinary staff want and what's going to benefit the animals. So you might have some training goals for things that you want to do that you think are going to be fun, but you also have to look at what's needed first. So usually when we're picking behaviors that we want before we write how we're going to do the plan, we prioritize which behaviors are most important for the animal and how they might affect other behaviors down the line. So our vet hospital, usually, you know, one of their biggest things is they want us to be able to weigh every animal. It's important to know what their weight is for health reasons and for medical reasons in case they have to be anesthetized or in case they have to be on a medication that's weight specific. And then they might say the next thing they want is an injection or whatever they think is most important for that animal. We want to prioritize. That's what we'll start with and focus on that. And then if we know that it's going to lead to other behaviors, we want to make sure that the behavior we're training will support future behaviors and not hurt them. For instance, training for injections for vaccinations is a really common behavior that we do with a lot of animals, and that only takes a small amount of time, but we don't want the animals to jump up when the needle goes in and run away, because later on down the line, we might want to draw blood, which takes a lot longer time. So we want to put in the training plan that part of the behavior is stay for a longer period than it takes to do an injection and to wait until they're released from that behavior. So a lot of priorities that are meshing together, and you got to look at all of them.
Yeah, because say if you're a keeper out there and you're working with that species that you just mentioned, and you've got these cool ideas to do some training based around getting the animals to do behaviors on cue for public talks or visitor engagement or something, and the vets are saying no, but we need to do this, and you've kind of, if you write down all those behaviors in your training plan, you can look at all the behaviors you want to achieve and kind of choose what's most important for the animals, the visitors, for the team, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, and you can do more than one behavior at once and make it fun for the animals and for the trainers, but you definitely want to make sure that your focus is on the behaviors that you need the most or that the vet staff needs the most.
Yeah, in my experience, and I'm curious to know if you have some of the experience, Debbie, because I find it happens quite regularly, is someone will come to me and say they want this behavior. They want to put a harness on an animal and take it for a walk around the zoo. But when we get down there, we realize that we need to do station training, target training. We need to build relationships, and we need to take quite a few steps back and work through all these behaviors before we get to those behaviors. And it's realizing by writing them down in a formal training plan, the amount and breadth of, like you said, behaviors we need to train to help us reach those end goals.
Yeah. So that's a really good point. And that's why, you know, the training plan is really beneficial too, because if your animal doesn't know anything and you have to condition a bridge and a target and a station to sit still and pay attention, that's your starting point. And so what the animal knows already is going to affect where you're starting with the new behavior. So I have some animals that may already know a bridge and a target and a station and a few other things. And so they're way far ahead of an animal who doesn't even know a bridge yet. And I have no way to communicate with the animal. So that's where I need to start.
Yeah, perfect. So for those sitting out there, when you're writing your training plan, write down the list of behaviors, all the behaviors that you want to train, all the behaviors that you need to train, and incorporate those into your plan. Is that what you would suggest?
You can write down all of them and then go, we're going to prioritize, like you said, and maybe start with the first three or the most simple or the most important. And again, the same with the animals, you know, depending on what they know already, they're going to go kindergarten to college. You're going to start with a simple behavior before you try to do something more complex. So once the animals start the training game, as I like to call it, and they learn that it's fun and how the rules work, then you can get more behaviors and more complicated behaviors as you're moving forward. Remembering that, you know, your first training experience for your animals can set their attitude towards training for the rest of their lives. So if you have a positive experience, the animal's going to look at training as positive. But if the animal has a negative experience, it may look at training in general as a negative occurrence. So you want to set your animal up to succeed.
Yeah, cool. Hey, we'll move on, Debbie. Thanks for all of that. A big part of writing our overall plan and goals is the incorporation of new behaviors that our animal might have to learn and add to its behavioral repertoire to help improve its life and welfare, and additionally help us achieve our goals. Planning is pretty important here as well. We want to use positive reinforcement to guide and facilitate our animal's learning process. Debbie, can you tell the audience about writing shaping plans and how these are incorporated into the overall holistic plan we write for our animals?
Well, the shaping plan, I think what you're saying is similar to any other kind of training plan, right? When we do our training plan, shaping plan, it's all of that information that we've already talked about. And then the last thing is the shaping and the approximations of the behavior. So that'll be the last thing. And, you know, sometimes I'll write a lot of details, and sometimes I'll write a few less details. It will depend on who else is going to be learning from it and using it. It's a great starting point to have that shaping plan, but I also remind everybody that it's just a starting point, because once you get started, you might have to change your original plan depending on that two-way communication, the feedback you're getting from your animal of, is your communication clear or is the step too big or too fast? So yes, you want to break that behavior behavior down into the very small and easily achievable steps.
So there are some pros to doing it, so you kind of know the way you're hitting, but there are possibly also some cons in being too specific because it might limit your flexibility. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, and people get stuck on, well, my plan says this, so I have to do this exactly, but you may need to change the plan that you originally wrote because it's not working out for your animal. So don't get stuck on it. One of my best examples is one of the first lions that I trained here. The reason I got to work with him is nobody wanted to work with him because he was deemed to be very aggressive and reactive and impatient. So I wanted to take on that challenge and help this animal out. And when I first developed a relationship with him and I taught him a bridge and that was all great. When I came out with a target, he lunged and barked at me and got very aggressive. And I think that he just thought anything that was coming out was negative, like a dart gun or something. And so I had, you know, developed a relationship with him, but it was still pretty new. So I ended up just not teaching him a target, but instead I had him visually follow the feeding tongs because he knew what those were and used those as my guide for him to get him from place to place. So the bead target went out the window and was changed, even though that was in my original plan, because of his very strong response.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And why you're saying that, because what I'm thinking is, say you're in your position and you're a new trainer and you're encouraged to write a training plan. So you wrote an extensive training plan and you took time out of your day to invest the energy into doing that activity. But then when it came to it, you realized that behavior dictated you change your approach that you had decided you were going to take. So Debbie, what is your opinion on the benefit of say someone who's new to animal training, someone who is still learning the shaping process themselves? Is it beneficial to spend time writing out all the approximations so they kind of understand how the process works, even though they might have to change it? Or do you think it's more beneficial to keep it a little bit simple because of that flexibility, or as a case-by-case basis?
I think it's important to write it out to make sure you've thought it through, and especially if you're new, to let somebody with more experience read through it and help you out, and also to get input from your veterinarian. So for example, if you're going to train a behavior for a specific use, like we want to ultrasound the tiger to see if it's pregnant. And if I don't know exactly how that procedure goes and what it entails, I'm not going to be able to properly train the behavior. So, you know, if I think the only thing I have to do is teach the animal to lay down and touch it with a probe, and then the vet says no, but I will also need to get the animal's fur wet with alcohol, put gel on the probe, and I need him to hold for a minimum of 10 minutes, or I'm not going to be able to get a good image. If I only train without gel and alcohol and only teach my tiger to lay down for 1 minute, then the behavior is not going to be useful. So it's nice to write it out to make sure that you're really going to condition everything you need for that behavior to be successful.
Right. And the long-term effect of doing that, even though it takes you time, is saving time in the future, right? Because writing this training plan, what you're doing is identifying all possible scenarios and all possible elements. And even though it takes time, it's going to save you time rather than investing lots of time into training that's ineffective, because you get to an end point and you realize you haven't thought about this or you haven't thought about that.
Yes. And it will save you frustration. And I learned that early on because I'd had that happen to me where I thought I had completed a behavior and then the vet said, well, no, that's not going to work unless you can have them hold for a full liter of fluids being put in. And I was like, what? I thought we only had to do this much. So I do like to make sure and know what exactly the animal is going to have to do and put up with on the day of. So what I tell everybody is that you want to practice everything as close to possible as what's going to happen, you know, the day that you're actually going to use that procedure. So is the animal going to have to do the behavior, say if it's an anesthesia injection, do they have to not have any food before they get the shot? Are they going to have to get vaccinations in the morning so we can observe them throughout the day? So if you do your training plan and you always train at 4 p.m. and then the day of the vaccination, the vet wants to give it at 10 a.m, your animal may be caught off guard or not as cooperative because they're not sure what's going on. If you are usually practicing the behavior by yourself and then the vet says, well, I need to be here with a machine and my vet tech or we can't get the x-ray and you haven't practiced for that, you're setting your animal up to fail. So writing out all of the steps will guarantee that you have practiced everything as close as possible as what's going to happen so that your animal can succeed the day that you need that behavior.
Yeah, and it's all about just having as much information as you can before you get started. And additionally, and tell me what you think, Debbie, when you get to roadblocks, you have already anticipated that you might reach that place to the best of your ability, and therefore you already have possible ideas moving forward.
Yes, definitely. You've kind of done a little bit of troubleshooting and you're preventing problems from occurring by planning everything ahead. And then, you know, if things don't go well or if they're not progressing the way you think, then you sit back and you have your training plan and your trainer's log and you can kind of evaluate what you've done and how you need to change your plan depending on what's been going on with what you tried. You try something new.
Yeah, and I can imagine how frustrating that lion situation must have been.
It was a little surprising to me. It was just my guess that he was looking at it as something like, you know, a dart gun or something, but it made sense to me because he was already 8 years old and his whole life he'd gotten vaccinations with a dart gun. So I came out with this stick and a bead on it, something he'd never seen. And he got very defensive from that, not knowing what it is. Later on, once we trained together a lot longer, I could bring out anything. And he trusted me much more and was not going to be worried about it. But you never know how they're going to react. And especially if it's an animal that maybe came from another facility and you don't know the complete history of that animal. And so sometimes their behavior is surprising and you don't know what caused it, but you know that you can modify it.
Yeah, great. And I'm looking forward to having a look at that document that you say that you guys use at San Francisco Zoo, because being a zookeeper in a zoo, depending on what zoo you work at, every facility is different, but obviously a precious resource is time. So having a process to go through, I think sounds great.
Yes. And you know, a lot of people do talk about the time that goes into training, and the time always is a lot more in the beginning. And then as animals learn the behavior, you think about the resources of time and money and energy that you're saving because an animal's cooperating in their healthcare as opposed to having to be restrained or anesthetized. You've got a much better use of your resources to put your time into training as opposed to restraint and anesthesia.
Yeah. Perfect. Hey, thanks so much for that, Debbie. This has been great. We have one last topic to cover today before we start to wrap up. And this is surrounding the appreciation that there is a world of people out there doing what we're doing at all various levels. The fact is, though, if we're going to be training a novel species or a novel behavior, chances are someone might have already done it or at least attempted to and learned a lot along the way. Debbie, can you express to the audience your feelings on the importance of reaching out to other trainers and other organizations to build upon and add to the information that you include in your training plan?
Yeah, I think it's an invaluable resource for everybody to know that there's a community out there that wants to help each other. I think there's some people that don't want to reach out because they're worried to say, I don't know everything, but nobody knows everything. We're all always learning. And like I said, I've done this for 40 years and I still will reach out either on a behavior listserv or to someone I know personally and ask them for information on things that they've trained to help me, to help my trainers and myself to succeed. So reach out and get all the information that you can from any resource that you have.
Yeah, because, you know, when you think about shaping behaviors, for example, you know, you might have a way of doing it in your mind, but someone else might have done it in a way that is setting up the animal to understand the shaping process much better. Or even if they've failed, and even if they've tried to do something that you want to do and they've failed, they've probably learned a lot along the way, haven't you? And those pieces of information they give you might save you time in the long run. Why reinvent the wheel, right?
Exactly. You learn from your successes and your mistakes. Being able to take other people's experience into consideration when you're writing your plan is, again, another way to help set yourself up to succeed by not repeating mistakes that somebody else might have made or that you've made yourself in the past. I know whenever there's something I've never trained before, the first time I train it, it takes me much longer because you're working out the bugs and figuring out how it's going to work. And then any animal after that takes a lot less time. So for example, my first lion that I trained for injection, it took me 3 months to take an animal who knew nothing, not even a bridge or a target, and give him his first vaccination voluntarily by hand. Later years, we brought a tiger in from another zoo. We had him in quarantine. We didn't want to have to dart him when he left quarantine. And in a month period, I had trained him for a hand injection. So that first animal, you might go a little bit slower and it might take you a while to figure out the logistics. And then down the line, each animal after that is going to go much quicker.
Yeah, that's great. And one other aspect that I've found has been really rewarding for me in going through this process of researching and reaching out to other people, especially when you are maybe training something you've never trained before, is you don't have therefore that reference in your own mind to say, hey, this is possible and this is achievable. And you might not know what the end behavior looks like, but to find someone else in a different organization in your same country, in a different country, doing that behavior in a really positive and unintrusive way and getting success is for me a really nice feeling to know that it's happening and there's that reference point and I can say, how did you do that? How did you get here? That is something for me to aim towards as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of the huge benefits of now having, you know, internet and email and all that kind of stuff where you can share videos with people of what you're doing. And, you know, I know you use the GoPros a lot and we just bought some here that we want to encourage people to start using. But back when I first started, when we didn't have GoPros and internet and video going on, I would go to other facilities and set up visit days, which I still do. I did that last year at Oakland Zoo and said, hey, show me things that you're training and what you're doing. And you watch other people train and they're proud to show you what they've done. And I always learned something going to another facility and watching what their program's all about and things that they've achieved.
Sounds like a win-win situation to me.
Yes, for sure.
Hey, cool. Hey, we're reaching the end there. A pretty nice and short, I guess you could say, comprehensive view of how to write good training plans. We talked about learning about your animal's natural history, individuality, reinforces, punishes, personality. We talked about considering your feng shui and your antecedent or environmental arrangement and the people that are additionally going to be training and their skill set and their relationship. We talked about setting goals and prioritizing what's important within the training situation you're working and the individual animal you're working and what they have to learn. We talked about writing shaping plans and being flexible, and then also about getting input from others. Is there anything else that you can think of, Debbie, that we can tag on there? And that is a pretty nice picture that you're going to be painting for your specific situation before you get going.
Yeah, well, thanks. I think just if you remember a few really important categories and then everything's going to fall into that, is that training is about a few really important things. It's really good communication. It's about really good motivation. And it's about having a good relationship with your animals. And then just remember to work safely and look at all of those components and you'll have the big picture that works.
Hey, that sounds great. And I'm just thinking on the spot, just before we wrap up, just to help everyone listening out there, Debbie's very kindly said she's going to share the process that her team goes through at San Francisco Zoo there. And I know you mentioned earlier on in the podcast, Debbie, about, I think it was AZA forums, maybe you touched on. Can you maybe tell the audience, in your experience, what has been some beneficial online spaces where people can go to learn more about this stuff and to interact with other people?
Yeah, so if you go on AZA, they have different groups that you can join, different listservs. And so I have joined the behavior managers and also the animal behavior listserv. And so you can get on those types of groups and post a question, which I've done multiple times. Recently, I did with our Komodo dragon because I'd never trained a Komodo before. And I just put out questions of what have you trained your Komodos and what type of reinforcers have you found to be successful with your animals? And so again, that comes into using those resources, get online with AZA or ABMA or IMATA, depending on the types of animals you're working with. And a lot of these organizations do have a group listserv where you can post questions and people are willing to share their knowledge and experience to help out other trainers.
Yeah. And if you're in the zoo industry, you know, AZA is the American one. If you're in Australasia, it's ASZK. If you're in Europe, there's a different one. Africa, there's a different one. South America, there's a different one. So in most places in the world, a local organization of keepers that you can connect with in the fashion that Debbie just mentioned. So take those opportunities. Hey, that was great, Debbie. Thank you so much for making time to do this podcast today and for all the great information you've just shared with it. I loved it, and I'm sure everyone listening learned a lot as well.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm always happy to talk to you, Ryan, and I'm always happy to help and encourage anybody else who wants to train.
And we're very happy for you to do that too, Debbie. Hey, like I said at the start of the podcast, if you haven't already done so, then you can learn more about Debbie in a previous podcast episode her and I did together a couple of months ago. I'll put a link to that in the write-up for this episode, and you can also download other podcast episodes direct from animaltrainingacademy.com, or you can find me on iTunes as well, and we are fast approaching 2,000 downloads on the website. So a big thank you to everyone out there that is taking time to engage with and listen to this content. It's very much appreciated. You guys rock. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, I also just want to quickly announce we are fast approaching Animal Training Academy's first year birthday. It was on the 11th of July 2015 that I released the first online course entitled The Recipe for Successful Behavior Management of Animals in Your Care. I can't believe it's been a year already, and I do have something special planned for that 1 year anniversary. I'm still pulling it all together and I'm not quite ready to announce exactly what it is yet, but it's happening in July, so keep listening to find out more. The weekly email newsletter is the best way to stay in touch, and you can become a free Animal Training Academy member and receive those newsletters by hitting the register button on animaltrainingacademy.com, where you'll be the first to find out exactly what I have planned for the 1 year birthday celebration. Of course, as well, when you do that and you register, you receive the 15 lesson online training tidbits course for free as well as my labor of love and special gift to you guys. So head over to animaltrainingacademy.com and I'll see you on the inside. And also leave your comments, guys. I've had such amazing feedback from you, the audience, and it's hugely reinforcing from my end to hear from you. Tell me if you liked the podcast. Tell me if you didn't like the podcast. Leave a message. Tell me what behaviors and species you are training. Just send me a message and say hi. Let me know your favorite color. Whatever you want. It doesn't matter. I would love to hear from you. Once again, Debbie, it has been an absolute pleasure, and my beautiful audience will be back again soon. Bye for now.